Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, it's Caroline from G-Thanks Just Bought It, reminding you that in between episodes, you can find me on Instagram at G-Thanks Just Bought It Pod. You can find products that don't make it onto the episodes and recommendations from listeners like you. So before you start this episode, give it a follow and say hi in the comments. And for a full list of every product we featured on G-Thanks, visit gthanksjustboughtit.com/episodes. See you there. Hey everyone, welcome to another week of G-Thanks Just Bought It, the podcast where we talk about what we just bought and what you might need to buy next. I'm your host, Caroline Moss, and today I am joined by someone you probably already know, Girls Night In Chief Lounger, Alicia Ramos. Alicia, I'm so happy to have you here because I feel like this has been months, years, decades in the making.
It's been a long time coming. I've been a big Caroline Moss fan for since I think your Hey Ladies book was when I knew of you before then, I think, but that book was life-changing. It made me laugh out loud when I was reading it alone in a park. Like, I'll never forget that moment. I'm sitting alone and literally just laughing out loud to myself and sending it to all my friends. So
that's
thank you.
So nice. Thank you. I'm so happy you like it. One of the most haunting things that ever happened to me was someone left a review about it on Amazon thinking it was like a true story, or like they were like, all these girls suck. And I'm like, no, I know, that's the point. You're supposed to hate all of them.
You did your job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And similarly, I've been a Girls Night In fan for a long time. One of the only newsletters I consistently open on a weekly basis.
Thank you.
And I rarely do I ever skip. Like, I can't think of...
That's big.
The open rate for me specifically is 100%.
You're a five-star subscriber.
Five-star subscriber.
In our MailChimp database, probably.
Can't wait to get my trophy. I love Girls Night In, and what I loved about it was, you know, being an introvert. I think most people assume I'm an extrovert because I'm very like loud online, but someone once described, you know, being introverted versus extroverted as, you know, where do you get your energy with other people or when you're by yourself? And for me, it's when I'm by myself. But I was also always a yes person, you know, like I really had a hard time saying no to anything. And Girls Night In was sort of the first time anyone that was like not my therapist was like, you can just block off time for yourself. And if someone asks you if you're busy, you can just say yes. And you don't have to tell them what you're like. You don't have to like lie and say like, no, I have a work thing. Like, no, I'm just like, I'm blocking off time. And to know that there were other people who also felt that way and who would also rather be like kind of spending that time with themselves was very helpful, because I always felt like the one extrovert introvert in a sea of extroverts, and felt like I was missing something by needing to like recharge by myself.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that. And I remember you mentioning that you were an introvert during one of your previous episodes. And I was also surprised because, you know, we all have our, you know, internet personas. I'm definitely more gregarious and outgoing online than I am in person. But I'm glad to hear that. And it's funny because we also have a lot of readers who identify as extroverted, and team members too, which has been interesting. So I think it's definitely an introversion paradise, like G and I. But I also think there's something for extroverts too, who need permission to like set boundaries. We all need permission to set boundaries. So, yeah.
That's very, I'm happy. Yeah. We all need permission to set boundaries. I think quarantine for me, and I don't know how you feel about it. Lately, I've been going back and looking on Instagram at everyone's like March 23rd posts, which are very funny because it had only been like maybe 6 days. And everyone's like, day six in quarantine. Like, what am I going to do? Like, it's now been like 6 months and now I haven't seen anything but the four walls of my house. And nothing is kitschy anymore. Everyone's like, I'm in matching pajamas and playing Animal Cross. And now I'm just like, I haven't washed my hair in a really long time.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I feel that so much because last night, Corey, my fiance, and I were just chatting and like reminiscing about the early, quote, early days of quarantine. Right? Do you remember the early days when, and we were just like reminiscing about like everyone was on Zoom calls and doing Instagram lives. And like, it was kind of, I don't want to say exciting, but it was like, everyone was in it together, and there was this like positive camaraderie around it versus now it's definitely exhausting. It's been politicized is like the other huge thing that has happened.
Yes.
And it feels, I think Molly Chen actually wrote about this in a recent Instagram post this morning. She used the word stagnant, which is how I feel. Like we are now 5 months in and we're all just kind of like a blob.
We're in it. Like this is just life now, you know. It's just like part of me felt like I wished on a monkey's paw because the first week or two or even first month was exciting in a way that was, I still had a lot of hope that we were gonna get it under control, that we wouldn't be failed by our government, that we would take it really seriously and, you know, everyone would believe that this was a threat, you know, rich, poor, black, white, like whatever, like this is something that affects all of us. And then very quickly, it became something that was really just hard to swallow. And so from an introvert standpoint, just the staying at home and like staying like permission from like the world, like literally like on a global level, it was like, please stay home. Please stay home. And you know, don't talk to people, like don't go out. And I was like, like this is my dream, like I live for this, like don't go out, like no problem. And now I just have dreams of like just sweating all over people and like going to clubs, which I don't do, but like the second we're allowed back in a club, I'm going to the club.
I feel the same way. Like there was that meme or a tweet or something that was going around the early days of quarantine where it was like that feeling when you realize that your everyday normal existence is called quarantining.
Yeah.
It's like, that's how I felt. I was like, yes, like I can actually stay home and have a reason or like not have to provide a reason for doing so.
It was like, I'm a hero for staying home, actually.
I miss commuting. Like I wrote a quick little thing about missing the DC Metro, which takes a lot to miss the DC Metro. I miss the like heat and humidity and just like keep being around people and like strangers. Oddly comforting,
just like
idea right now,
the moving and like just people like crossing paths and going to where they need to go. And, you know, just like the life and breath of I would say the globe, but most other countries have it under control and are getting back to some sort of normalcy now, but not us. I just kind of miss the, there's things that I, and you know, I moved. So like, I don't even have a routine in LA that isn't quarantine and, you know, but what I miss the most about New York similarly is like getting on the subway. That was my reading time. I think you wrote the same thing. Like I like would have a solid 40 minutes when I would commute and like just read, and like there would be, I just can't even imagine what it would feel like now to be in a subway during rush hour when everyone is like just pressed up against you and not feeling panicked. You know what I mean? Like that never made me feel panicked, and now I can't imagine doing that again. And I wonder,
there are so many, 100%. Like even just watching, what were we watching the other day? We were watching Selling Sunset, and there are many, I mean, like watching anything pop culture recently where anyone gives a hug or like a kiss or holds your hand or does like a double, like dips into the same, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, you're like, what the?
That was a thing?
Yes. For that, the onset of that happened really quickly for me. Like, I felt like everything I watched, I was like, they're standing too close. Like some Law and Order episode from like 2001. I was like, they're in the same room. And now, and now I realize that the thing that sets me off more is like when someone from the before time, like, okay, are you done with Selling Sunset?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to, if you haven't watched Selling Sunset, just like mute this for a second. But when Chrishell flies back to Kentucky or St. Louis, to Missouri, and she just gets on the plane. She's like, I'm going home and I'm just going to get on the plane and go. I was like, oh my God, you could just get on a plane.
You can just do that.
You don't have to quarantine before and after.
Oh my God.
And that was only, 7 or 8 months ago. Poor Chrishell.
I have so many thoughts.
Can we talk about another episode? No, though. I think it's this episode.
Let's talk about this.
I want to talk about Selling Sunset for a sec because I have a group chat called We Are the Oppenheim Group with girlfriends. And all we talk about is Selling Sunset. And my phone has recently now accepted Chrishell, Davina, and Amanza as words. Like they don't try, it doesn't try to autocorrect anymore. Okay, we are like Chrishell, yes. We are not trying to spell anything else. We are trying to spell Chrishell. Started watching that show at the recommendation of Rachel Wilkerson Miller. And I said, I don't think it's for me. And she said, just try it. And I didn't move off my couch for 12 hours. I watched seasons one and two in like one breath.
Yeah. I was so sad when we finished the last season.
I'm obsessed.
I wanted more. It's so good. And it's so good because the producers did such a great job in season two, at least, of setting up the villain versus the victim, like Chrishell, obviously, and then Davina versus season one. Christine as the villain was my favorite. She is just incredible. Do you think she and Karamo are actually friends? That was a question that came up.
I think they are. There was a familiarity. That's a word I have never been able to say out loud and probably never will be able to. They seemed familiar to each other during that that scene.
That's what I thought too.
She is – so if you guys are not watching Selling Sunset, the long and short of it is it's like eight beautiful women. Beautiful, like gorgeous LA, lots of work done women.
Very LA.
Not the LA I currently reside in. I'm like 6 miles east and it makes all the difference. But like they're real estate agents and they work for twins who you can't tell apart, Jason and Brett, who are also like 5'4". And these women, that they're like pin thin, so skinny, like LA skinny, and they look like giants next to these dudes. Like every time they're standing in a room with them, they look like they could step on them, and it's so funny. But the guys also exude this like really like powerful, like kind of like sexual energy that like, I don't know, that maybe that's my read. Alicia's like and I'm like, they're very sexy.
I can see it. They've got that whole vibe.
Yeah.
Definitely. They've got the power moves, the power suit.
Yeah.
Have you heard about the secret guy who works there, though?
I feel like Maya, one of the agents, like mentioned him in passing this past season, and my ears perked up. And I was like, oh, so I bet there are like other agents and also men who work there, but they like just sort of cherry picked like the hottest seven girls. So it looks like these girls just like work for these two very small twins.
There's definitely more employees. There's one in particular though that has a YouTube channel about financial management.
Perfect.
His name is Grant. I'll send you a link. I didn't know about it either until Marianne on our team told me about it.
Amazing.
And my mind was blown. Like, there are other people at the Oppenheim group.
Right.
Like,
there are more Oppenheims at the Oppenheim group. It's crazy. Yeah. The show is essentially they sell houses, but like, beware because they don't really sell a house till like episode 6 of season 1. It's sort of like an afterthought, but it's true. These monstrosity houses. Like, it's like LA and like everything's kind of, I don't know, everything's kind of ugly in like a very like, if you've seen one, you've seen them all, you know, $40 million house. Like, here's a remote and the TV like comes out of the earth. Like, okay. All right,
or there's like a waterfall in your car garage, your 11 car or 12 car garage.
Your 12 car garage with a waterfall. I mean, but also who, I would need a waterfall in my 12 car garage. I mean, it's like, it's very crazy. But there's.
Can you imagine quarantining in that house? Like alone?
I would love to imagine.
Like such a large house.
Yeah. I would love that for like
one.
That would
be so sad.
It would make me like totally alone.
Yeah,
okay.
Alone.
I would be happy during the day and then terrified at night. Yes. There are too many buttons that like probably like set off many different things. And I think I would be like so afraid. Like, like the waterfall would start going and I would have like a baseball bat ready to like take someone down.
Yeah. Like seeing that kind of excess now in quarantine, like with our lens, is so interesting because it's, what is the point? Like, what I think a lot of us are asking ourselves a lot of existential questions right now, but
you
like
bet.
What even is the point of having a 50 bedroom home if does like is that what I don't know. Maybe it's different in LA, in the Hollywood Hills.
Not my LA. I know. It's very weird. Like, when Dan and I watch, we're like, it's weird that we live here because that's not our experience. But it's the same thing as watching, for us, like, Million Dollar Listing in New York. Like, you look at all these apartments and it's like, oh, here's this two-bedroom apartment on Central Park South and it's, like, $5 million. And you're like, I don't know that life. Like, I recognize the streets and obviously, like, yes, here are some B-roll shots of the city. But, like, I don't live in a world where I'm like, yeah, I have $5 million, like, just looking for an apartment. Like, there's like a different world.
In D.C., we were recently house hunting, and some of the prices on these houses, it's literally you have to ask, like, what do you do for a living? What do you have to do? What am I doing wrong?
Yes.
I'm so curious. Like, is everybody a surgeon?
Right.
You know,
who? What's your last name? Like, what kind of family money did you come from?
That, yeah, right.
1,000%. Well, yeah, when I lived in Cobble Hill in Brooklyn, it was exactly like, you know, that and Brooklyn Heights were like two of the most expensive, you know, neighborhoods. We lived in an apartment and we paid for New York a fair amount of rent, for the rest of the world, exorbitant. But Brooklyn Heights is just 9-bedroom townhouses and like just huge like brownstones, and I would say to myself, like, I would like to knock, I want to go trick-or-treating, and then instead of them giving me candy, I need to know, I want like business cards, and I want to know like your family's financial history.
I would watch that show. It's like MTV Cribs meets Money Diaries.
Yes. We should
/ Billy on the Street.
Yes, we should pitch this.
Like, all those three combined.
Yeah, I want that. Like, I like watching real estate shows, but I feel like what they hide is how you actually got this money.
That would do so well.
I
want
to know.
But you know, people won't share.
No. If I had that much money, I probably wouldn't either. But I also probably wouldn't want to go on television and be like, I'm very rich and I'm looking for a very expensive apartment. The thing about Selling Sunset that I love is that it is produced by Adam DeVello, who did Laguna Beach and The Hills. So this guy knows reality TV. He knows how to create a villain. He knows how to create tension. And if you haven't watched Selling Sunset yet, just the barrier to entry is the first episode where you will not be able to tell any of them apart, but then you will then you will learn their names and you will be like, that's Christine and that's Heather. Because in the beginning I was like, that's Mary. No, that's Heather. No, yes. That's Mary. Oh, it's Mary. No. Okay, that's Christine. Oh,
100%.
No, okay. After episode one, I found myself, I just said this to the group chat the other day. I was like, the first episode of this show requires one of those PR decks that like Anne Hathaway got when she was in The Devil Wears Prada and she goes to the party and it's like the guest list with like their picture and then like what their names are. Like, that's what you need to watch the first episode of Selling Sunset.
That's after very that, accurate.
You're good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is an incredible show.
It's great TV. It's so good. And lots of maybe a few characters you will learn to love to hate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which we all need some type of emotional release right now. And for me, it's Selling Sunset.
Have a villain and let your villain be some like, there is this amazing scene. And I wonder if you picked up on it. They all, so three of them go to this like pretty fancy looking restaurant. And the other thing too is that no matter where they go, morning, noon, or night, they're all dressed for the club. Like they're like at coffee and Christine is like literally in full drag. So they're at this like very fancy restaurant and it's Maya and she's the real estate agent from Israel. There's Christine who is the villain, and then there's Heather, who is married or who's engaged to Tariq El Moussa, who is from Love It or List It, or like one of those HGTV shows. So like there, yes.
I actually didn't know that. Oh, I thought he was a hockey player.
No.
Or that was her old
boyfriend. Yeah. Tariq is the guy from HGTV, and he had a show with his ex-wife. And then they got divorced, and his ex-wife looks exactly like Heather. That's a whole other thing. But these,
oh my God. These three. These things did not click for me.
You gotta go deep.
I'm gonna do some Googling.
The best part is this scene. They're all three of them at this lunch. The poor waitress comes over. She's probably just been told, like, okay, like, there's a Netflix show filming. You have to go take their order. And she's probably like, what the hell? Thanks a lot. And Maya goes, do you guys make smoothies or milkshakes? And the woman's like, yeah, it's a literal fancy restaurant. And she goes, I'll have a peanut butter milkshake. Then Christine goes, I'll have sweet potato fries and a Dr. Pepper. And Heather goes, I'll have water. And the waitress repeats back. So she's like, okay, so we're ordering one peanut butter milkshake, sweet potato fries, a Dr. Pepper, and a water for lunch. And they're all like, yeah, thank you so much. And that's their lunch. It's so funny. It's so chaotic.
I miss that scene.
Oh, it's so good. Somehow. Oh, I'm gonna send it to you.
Yes.
I was like screaming when I watched it.
I'm also just floored by their dress, of how they dress to work. It's literally
club.
Stiletto heels and club, what you would wear to the club.
Yeah. What you would have worn to the club also like maybe like 8 years ago. Like LA is like a little behind the East Coast in terms of fashion. But even when they go to do something casual, it's like wear cute athleisure. Like wear a cute sneaker. Yeah. No, they're in like a bandage dress. Like they're like in a full.
Yeah.
It's very funny. I feel like everyone should watch. We're going to take a very quick break and then we will be right back. Okay, we're back. Besides Selling Sunset, what else are you watching right now?
Oh my gosh, what am I not watching? We just finished seasons 1 and 2 of Killing Eve.
How do you like it?
I love it. At first, I'm not really into like dark,
like prestige,
like violent things, but the actresses are so good. The woman who plays Villanelle, the main villain, is such a she plays a psychopath, like a sociopath or a psychopath, and she's just so good. Her expressions when she's smiling is so unnerving. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've watched season 1 and 2 and had similar feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't realize that Phoebe Waller-Bridge wrote season 1 or like part of season 1, or she was a writer on the show. Yeah, which makes total sense to me now of like why.
Because it's great.
The writing is so good.
Yeah, and Sandra Oh is incredible.
Sandra Oh is amazing. She won awards for her performance, right?
Yeah, I think she did.
Well deserved.
So good.
Great head of hair. Great hair.
There's a lot of
she represents the Asian. I'm also a curly haired Asian, mm-hmm. so whenever I see someone else with that, I just really admire her hair. It's amazing.
You both have really good hair.
Yeah.
You should be on Killing Eve. You should email the casting director and be like, FYI. I
can
also
I just be like a stunt double?
Yeah, right.
You can stab me.
Like, go for it. Go for it, the knives. You saw the episode where Villanelle is wearing that like amazing pink dress on the park. There's like that one scene.
In Amsterdam?
Yes. I think yes. of that dress
unforgettable
constantly.
Outfit. Costume design, incredible. Season one, we just started, and those costumes are like leveling up mm-hmm. all the other costumes. Mm-hmm. They're like in Spain. They're in, I don't even know where. It's just awesome to watch.
Is it something that you guys binged, or were you doing like one episode a night? Like, what was your Killing Eve routine?
We have very little self-restraint when it comes to watching shows. So we watched, yeah, we've been watching like 2 to 3 episodes a night.
Wow.
So yeah, we finished it in like a week or two, season one and two. And now I'm sad. I'm like getting to that part of quarantine where I'm sad because we're running out of the good shows. Every now and then Netflix will have a good show drop. Like Babysitter's Club was that.
So good.
I think most recent one. Yes. So good.
So good.
I didn't grow up reading The Babysitter's Club. Yeah, my childhood is weird. Like, I grew up in Korea, so a lot of my childhood entertainment was like Korean kids shows.
That makes sense.
Like, K-pop.
Right.
And like watching all the K-pop shows. And then I watched this Netflix version, and I finally understand. It's so wholesome. Every episode made me cry. I'm sure like you.
Yes.
You watched it, right? Okay, yeah. Yeah.
I cried like the whole time. It also was like, you know, there's always been like a long standing conversation about like reboot culture, and it's like people are like, you don't have to reboot everything. Like, some things are mm-hmm. just sort of meant to be like what they were, and we yeah. remember them fondly, and please don't bring them
take
back.
take your lesson from like Cats. Just right. don't, exactly. don't do it.
Look to Cats if you're ever thinking like, hey, this like show from the 80s or this book from the 80s or this thing that's already been done, this book that was already a movie, does not need now another movie. I felt that about Gilmore Girls. I felt it about literally probably everything else that's gotten a reboot. And Babysitter's Club yeah. was the first thing that I was like, this is actually so well done. And also like so seamlessly now trans, because the book started coming out in like 1986, 1987. Mm-hmm. So I didn't start reading them until I was like 8 or 9. So it would be like the early 90s. And you know, now it's 2020 and this show comes out and it feels so, there's so much stuff in it that's like exactly true to the experience of reading them in the 90s, but they've managed to build it in a world where it exists in 2020 and it makes sense.
Yeah.
And like, that's yeah. really difficult to do. And they really did it. And
yeah,
I was talking.
Who was your, oh, sorry.
No,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Who was your favorite character
Claudia.
Growing up when you were reading? Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I always thought Stacey was like so cool because like in the way that, you know, all like girls with blonde hair named Stacey are cool. Like in the 90210 age, you're just like, oh my God,
yeah.
like Jenny Garth.
Totally.
But Claudia was the coolest. I mean, Claudia remains the coolest.
She is the cool. I mean, I didn't coolest. Read the books, mm-hmm. but from the show, I want all her clothes.
Me too.
First of all, like all her hairstyles, her clothes are so cool. There's also, have you seen the follow-up Netflix documentary about Claudia Kishi? It's like a mini
no.
documentary. Yeah, it's like,
what?
You should watch it. It's like a 20-minute mini documentary of Asian Americans, like creators who loved Claudia Kishi growing up and what Claudia meant to them growing up, because obviously, you know, like Asians were not represented in mainstream pop culture or books for kids. And Claudia was the cool one of the Babysitter's Club, apparently.
She was the coolest.
Yeah. And so it's a documentary, really sweet, of like what Claudia meant to them, how the character came to be. Yeah. It's and how the characters evolved. Yeah.
That sounds so good.
I will highly recommend it.
Definitely watch that. Yeah, I think that they like diversified the cast in a way that was so needed. You know, like in the books, like four of them were blonde. Like you don't need like four like blonde white girls. And the other, like, you know, there are so many different issues that were presented. So I have a friend who has a 10-year-old, and she was like, they were watching it together, and she was like, oh, I never read the books. She's a little older than me, so she's like, I never read the books growing up. Like, was this, were these the same storylines in the books? And I was like, there were a lot of like through threads, but like, no, they weren't talking about trans issues in 1987. To feel like that so seamlessly was brought into, you know, one of the episodes that came out on the Netflix show without it being like, this is an episode about trans people, you know what I mean? It's like, yes. It's like, this is just, you know, they babysit a kid and like, you know, she identifies as a girl and, you know, Marianne takes her to the hospital and the doctor keeps misgendering her and Marianne like basically tells the doctor and like that's a thing that Marianne totally would do. That's Marianne. Yeah. And if you know Marianne from the books and from growing up with these characters, it was very easy for me to believe that this was like exactly her character. And so I have a softer spot for reboot culture now, because I'm like, if everything is done as good as this was done, yeah, then we should keep doing reboots. But don't be lazy about it.
But also cats. So,
but also cat. But then know, also on the other side of the scale.
Either way.
Right.
Yeah.
Then there's cats. It's so true. Right. You're either the Babysitter's Club or you're cats, and figure it out and act accordingly. I want to know what you brought, but I'm going to start with my recommendation because it's TV related.
Okay.
So do you have the Pluto TV app?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
This is my favorite new thing. It new to me in quarantine. Dan discovered it back in March, and it is an app that is, it's so funny because it is like the antithesis of why we all love streaming platforms, but bear with me. So Pluto TV is a free app on Roku. I'm not sure if Apple TV has it, but I'm sure there's something there. So it is free. And it mimics real TV. So there's a channel guide and there's like, you can see like what's on in a half hour. It's like real TV. But
I'm like, okay, let me try to.
Yeah, right. You're like, let's see, like, what is that like? What could that, right, exactly. Yeah. And, but the kind of the thing is that like most of what they show is available on different platforms, but they show it in the context of watching live television. So like there is, and every show, not every show, but lots of shows have their own channel. So there is a Forensic Files channel and it's just 24/7 Forensic Files, and you just put it on and when you turn it on, it's like halfway through an episode. And then there's a few ads here and there. And then in a half hour, there's another episode. And they have on-demand movies. And I think the way that Dan found it was there was an MTV Cribs channel that is 24/7 MTV Cribs. And then they had Troop Beverly Hills streaming. So I watched Troop Beverly Hills and was very happy. They have like a channel that just plays The Hills. They have a channel that just plays Laguna Beach. So in quarantine, I have found it very comforting because I don't have cable like any other millennial. I just use streaming platforms, but it kind of like fulfills that idle, like I don't have to make any decisions. Like I just put on the channel and then it's like there. And it's funny. So I recommended it to, I was talking to Amina about getting really into Forensic Files, and she was like, you know, they have it all streaming on Netflix. And I was like, she's like, why are you trying to convince me to watch like this show with ads, where I can't pick the episode myself. I just have to see what comes on next. When I could just stream it, I was like, just try it. And like literally 2 hours later, she texted me and she was like, I love Pluto TV. Pluto TV is everything to me. Like, and it just kind of gives you that feeling of like, you know, like, oh, let's just see what's on TV. And you like find an episode of The Hills that's like halfway through and you're like, oh, I love this episode. And maybe I won't see it again for a while. It's fun. And I, because you said you and Corey were like having a hard time, just like there's not a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
This was sort of like, I don't know, it does something for me that I can't explain. It takes away having to choose.
Yeah.
You know, you just.
That's a big thing to take away.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time wasted on the Netflix home screen.
Yes. Too many choices. To watch. Yeah.
So do you pay for the app?
No, it's free.
Okay.
It just has ads.
That is fascinating. It's really funny. I'm going to look this up. We do have Roku. So
yeah.
I'm going to look that up.
Pluto TV.
I get it, though. Like, there's a strange, like, we're all craving right now, like, comfort and comforting moods and feelings. And, yeah, just when you're describing turning on the TV and it being in the middle of a show.
Yeah.
That's a feeling that's an experience I haven't had in so long.
Right. It's like, yeah. We already have so much to think. I mean, this is it's like the lowest stakes possible sort of way that this is projecting itself. But like, we already have so many things to think about right now. And, you know, I think we've all been in the position where it's like, you need sound to go to bed. So you need to pick something to watch before you fall asleep. And even though, you know, you're going to be asleep within like 90 seconds of turning it on, you somehow spend like a half hour deciding what it is that you're going to turn on before you turn on The Office, which is exactly what I do every single night. And it's like, it gives me this thing where it's like, thank you. Like, thanks for taking the work out of this for me. Like, I don't want to pick. I don't want to feel – there's no pressure in choosing what you're going to stream unless you're me, and then I feel, like, insane pressure for some reason. But, like, I don't know. Just, great. You pick the episode. I'll watch it. You tell me what to watch. I'll do
it. Also, it just, like, helps you give in to the, like, fact that you're probably going to watch all the shows ever anyway by the end of whenever this thing ends. So like,
2025.
Why not watch any, you know, it doesn't matter.
Just turn it on.
It doesn't matter.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. It's crazy. It's like, great. Fine. Show me Forensic Files. And now I'm obsessed with Forensic Files. Have you ever watched Forensic Files?
No.
Wild.
Is it, can you describe, is it like a, is it fiction or is it?
No, it's nonfiction. So it's very 80s and early 90s. Okay. And everyone has like a coiffed bang. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah. Like,
yeah.
You've seen a picture of your mom looking like this woman on this episode of Forensic Files. Like, you know what I mean? It's like very like, okay, I see you, 1993. And it is at the, it's sort of like from the mid 80s to the early 90s, kind of at the boom of computers and the internet and being able to use science and forensics to solve crimes. So it's a half hour show, and it's like this guy essentially like Clark came home and his wife was like murdered, and you know, like, and it's like, okay, well, none of the evidence from like the naked eye could determine who the killer was, but they'll say like, okay, but then we collected, you know, the footprints, and we could, using this type of forensics, we discovered that the gravel from Clark's driveway, and it's just like so funny, A, because it's 2020, and you're like, wow, this was very novel like 30 years ago. B, because everyone loves like true crime. I'm so desensitized to it, but everyone loves like a true crime show, or not everyone. I love a true crime show. And also it's very funny, and Amina and I were laughing at this too when we were like texting back and forth about what we were watching. It's like at the end of every episode, it's like, and Clark won't be paroled until 2002. You're like, oh my god, how old is this episode? You're like, Clark. And every day I'm like, god. Googling, I'm like, where's Clark from Forensic Files? Like, where does he live now?
Oh my god,
it's very funny. There was a meme going around the other day, that a TikTok that really spoke to me, and it was like a woman like mopping her floor and doing her dishes, and it was like, this is me doing my chores, and it's her just like with a normal look on her face, like doing all of her chores, and she has her headphones on, and you just hear like The body was found at the end of the road. It was decapitated. And she's just like, like doing my dishes. And that's exactly how I am when I watch Forensic Files. Like, could not be less, like, nothing is affecting me. But it's fun. It's very, like, 80s crime. Dan thinks I'm crazy. He's not into that stuff. He, like, I love Law & Order. He's not really into Law & Order. But he'll, like, walk by the room when I'm watching it. And he's like, what the hell are you watching? Like, what is this?
You have to be in a certain mood. I'm not a true crime person, okay. But I can definitely see the, appeal of that.
You know, it's weird when, I will say it's weird that when Law & Order and Forensic Files are the things that are calming you during like a global crisis. I'm like, yes. I'm very calmed by this murder. So that's my recommendation. Pluto TV just kind of brings you back to being a kid, watching TV after school, flipping through the channels, seeing what's on, you know.
Love it.
Like, who would have thought that, you know, not even a decade into the streaming culture, we would be yearning for, like, just regular looking TV.
Everything old is new again.
Everything old is new again.
Basically.
Somehow we don't want any more choices. I just want choices to be made for me. So that's my recommendation. And so everyone should really know, because I just need, like, to fill everyone in. We're all family here. Alicia sends me an email like an hour before we start recording. And she goes, I'm not sure if you need my list beforehand. Here's a brain dump of lots of things in order of passion. It is it is 17 things long. You have now beat Amina and Anne were the ones who last brought as many recommendations as we've ever had on the show. You just beat them by like five or six.
Amazing. Always my goal.
Always your goal.
Meet their bar.
And you actually had similar. One of them was the Salix washcloth.
Yeah, Korean shower towel.
Yeah, and your reasoning was everyone needs one. Which you guys, that's two recommendations of this.
Everyone
Salix.
Needs one. I grew up with it.
Yes,
it's a
right.
part of the culture, and it's the only right way to wash your body. I don't believe in loofahs. The first time I saw a loofah, I was horrified. It was in college. My roommates had a loofah. I was like, is this how people have been living?
Like one of
lives?
The colorful ones that you get for like a dollar at CVS and they're like purple.
It was like purple and just like hanging in the shower.
Yeah. It's funny. Amina said the same thing. She was like, the thing that you learn when you have a diverse group of friends is like how to wash your body properly.
Improperly. Yeah.
Yes, right. I also was a loofah person. I need you to just tell me a little bit more about why you love the washcloth. Because I think we just need to kind of send the point straight home.
Yeah, and I listened to the Anna and Amina episode, and they mentioned this too, or Amina mentioned this, but the size is, the one that I have at least, is long.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that, because washing my back is very important to me.
Yes.
And when you have a long washcloth like that, you can do the... I'm doing a move right now. You can't really see, but you can.
Yeah, you can, I know exactly what you're
behind
doing.
You and kind of like wiggle around.
Yeah.
And it's just so satisfying to know that you can get those hard to reach spots.
Wash your body, people. It's important.
And exfoliating, so important. Yeah. It's such a great exfoliator for your body. Especially like if you shave your legs or like any other part of your body, like it's important to exfoliate. For me, at least, it is before I shave. So it helps with that. It also is great for travel, is another reason why I love it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's dry, of course, it's very lightweight. And you can fold it into like a tiny little square.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a two-person sell. And these are people that like I think we all trust. So if you have a loofah, say goodbye to it. The Salix washcloth is where it's at. But I did want to spend more time on one of your recommendations that we haven't talked on the show about before. So you said an order of passion. So do you want to go with number one?
Yes.
Let's get into it.
I brought my rice cooker.
Yes.
It's a Cuckoo is the brand rice cooker. It is roughly a little over $100.
Okay.
Before you gawk at the price, let me tell you why I love this. I described it as the Rolls Royce of rice cookers.
You did. You did.
And this is another thing, you know, that was a staple of my childhood. We always, you know, my mother is Korean. We always had rice, like, pretty much every single night mm-hmm. for dinner at home. And so we always had this rice cooker on our countertops. And then, and I thought that everyone had one for some reason.
Uh-huh.
And that everyone consumed as much rice as we did.
Sure.
And then at some point, of course, I had this, like, rude awakening and had a similar thought process of, like, oh, my God, like, how are people making their rice? How are people – are they, like, putting it in a pot and do – like, what's going on here? And I think that is
how
usually –
How old were you when you had that thought? How old were you when you figured out that not everybody was using the rice cooker?
I was pretty old, like, 20.
You're like, last month, yes.
I thought this was a staple kitchen appliance.
Interesting.
But turns out you can really only get it at H Mart or, you know, Asian markets or the internet also has them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great because if you are also an avid rice consumer, it's kind of a set it and forget it thing, as you might guess mm-hmm. from what it is. It's a one utility kitchen tool. But you can make rice in really big batches. The consistency of the quality is top notch. You know, once you understand how much water to pour in, how to wash the rice, like every single time you will get the most perfect, fluffy, sticky white rice ever.
It is a game changer.
It's a game changer. And the one that I have is great because it has different, like, buttons for different modes.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. It's the it just came out. The Kuka rice cooker. Is it the one with the red?
Yeah.
Okay,
I have
cool.
the red one.
Cute.
And there's different buttons. Truth be told, the only mode that we ever use in our household is called turbo mode.
Hell yeah. Go for it. let's like bring it on home.
Turbo mode basically cooks your rice in 15 to 20 minutes. So it's kind of like the faster mode.
Love it.
But I mean, the quality of what you get is great. I said that it looks really cute on our countertop. It's always on our countertop.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's done cooking your rice, such a delightful thing. It like sings to you. And the really fancier ones sing like a whole song to you, usually in Korean
yes.
or Japanese, like depending on the model that you get.
I can't think of anything bad about this. I'm looking at it right now. It looks kind of amazing, but it also looks like there's like a lot of different, like, does it make, it says like porridge, steam, multi, like do rice cookers do other things than cook rice? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, it makes other, yeah, I mean, it makes like other types of rice dishes, like porridge is one of them.
Baby food, it says too.
Yeah, I'm sure you could make baby food in it. We haven't tried.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no need. We don't right. have a baby, so just, we haven't tried that.
Just for fun, right.
There's like little hacks too. Like you can half a tomato or cut a tomato in half and
what?
Put it in your rice cooker and it makes this delicious tomato rice, which is so good and
sounds
so easy.
Great.
I'm sure you could also make quinoa in a rice cooker because I've always made, if I ever dare have to make rice
yeah.
on a stovetop, usually it's a similar process of cooking quinoa. So I'm assuming it will also work for that.
I don't know how to make, so we have a Zoji Rushi rice cooker.
Oh, yeah.
That Dan found at Goodwill for $5. This is like a $200 rice cooker.
I was going to say that is the Rolls Royce of rice cookers.
It was $5. I've never seen him happier. Like, maybe not even at our wedding. Like, this might have been the happiest I've ever seen Dan. He was just holding it like a child. Like, I felt like I should push him out of the Goodwill in a wheelchair, like with balloons.
That's
that
a
are like
great
congratulations.
Find. I share in Dan's joy.
I'm excited to tell him that you brought a rice cooker because I was very much like, I thought you didn't like one tool cooking things, and I was like, this is so much counter space, and he uses it like every day, and that thing sings all day long. It's always like, burr, 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 and it's like, long. Yeah. But it makes also, the best rice.
That's a great price for that model. There's like different levels of rice cookers. I would say Cuckoo is like the Nissan. I misspoke. I would say it's more Nissan, and Zojirushi is more like Rolls Royce.
Well, we paid $5 for a Zojirushi. I think also, like, if you are a Goodwill person, if you are an eBay person, like, rice cookers abound. You could probably find something for like, and it's also, it's like, you don't be, it's okay to use it used. You know what I mean? Like, you can wash it. You can, like, wipe it down. Yeah. There's it's like a pot inside of it that you put, you know, you can wash anyway. But I'm looking at the Cuckoo one right now, and it's about $100, which, like, yeah, it's expensive, but also, like, if you are making a lot of rice, mm-hmm. and rice is, like, part of your, like, meals more often than not, and right, exactly, then, like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's certainly a staple in our household, so highly recommend it. Also, I don't know if you and Dan have a rice paddle, but that's a...
What's a rice
paddle? Thing I would also...
I don't know anything.
It's like a scooper, basically, okay, for your rice cooker.
We do not. It's like it's so cute.
Yeah, it's like a cute little plastic paddle that helps you scoop. It's rounded. Yeah. It looks like a ping pong racket, yes, almost, it does. But smaller. Mm-hmm. And it helps you scoop out the rice in the rice cooker without scratching the metal bucket that's in the rice cooker.
So it's like a rice spatula.
Yeah, and the rice doesn't stick to the paddle. So, wow.
Yeah, that looks that's something we definitely
should surprise
need.
Him with that.
I should. That I'll be accessory. Really happy. How much rice are you making a week? Just because I want to know.
Probably one pot full, which is maybe enough for like 6 servings.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of rice. And yeah. Also, like, rice keeps. So you can just go, you can just, like, make a ton of rice and then just put it in a Tupperware and then have it.
Rice keeps really well. And, like, several days old rice that you've had sitting in the fridge is the best kind of rice to make fried rice with.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of days old. Like, the food that tastes the best after, like, 2 days in the fridge is, like, my extreme shit. It's not all food, but but letting rice sit for a little bit is a good one. We're going to take another quick break, and we will be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We're back. The Cuckoo rice cooker. I'm excited. I think, like, after we get off the phone, I'm going to ask for, like, a full Zojirushi lesson from Dan. Because yeah. I'm very, like, I don't know. Like, this is, like, old news to regular listeners, but, like, I'm not at home in the kitchen. But I'm learning. But learning to use the rice cooker seems like exactly my speed. It's literally pressing buttons. I feel like I can handle.
Yeah.
I feel like I can handle. I want to go through, like, every single other thing on this list. And what I will do is I'm going to share your whole list with people.
Oh, great.
But what's another one? Let's pick, like, I want to hear about, like, two more things. So okay. out of 17 things, I'm putting you on the spot. Pick another one you want to talk about that you don't want to forget.
Okay. Well, I sent this to Caroline in all caps, so I think I have to talk about this one.
Yes.
I have ugly headphones.
Yes.
I would love to talk about this. I actually have it. I can show you. But these are, I was on the hunt for new wireless headphones.
Yep.
This was back when I was commuting. RIP.
Yeah, back when we left the house. TBT.
Commuting.
TBT outside.
But I think my thing was I still haven't given in to AirPods.
Okay.
Like, I just I don't know why there's this like obstacle to me buying into AirPods. I just don't want to really pay for like them.
I get it.
I've always seen people struggle to like connect into phone calls
one
or conference
drops.
Calls. Like, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just don't want to deal with that. I just want like headphones that work and are wireless and are over the ear too.
Is that so much to ask?
So I did some Amazon searching and found these headphones. They're great because they're only like $39.
Great.
They're very comfortable on your ear. They have so much cushioning. It's like clouds on your ears. It's great.
I like that.
So
what are they called? I have to Google
it's
it.
Like some weird brand I've never heard. MPOW is the brand.
Oh, sure. MPOW.
MPOW.
Oh, I don't know if it's MPOW, but it should be. It's a good name.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's over ear. Are there, and they're Bluetooth?
They're Bluetooth.
Okay.
They're Bluetooth headphones. They're pretty ugly. but they give me so much comfort. Like, I think this was my best pre-quarantine purchase without knowing it, without knowing just like how much I would be using it in quarantine. Mm-hmm. Like, I use it. It's not technically noise canceling, but it is really good at blocking a lot of noise out. So for me and my fiance, he might kill me for like telling the story, but he loves spending time with me and just like being in the same room. He loves watching TV like more than I do. So we'll usually sit on the couch together, but sometimes I don't want to watch Shameless. Like, that's not a show that I want to watch. So instead, I will be on the couch with him so we can like be together or whatever. And I'll put my headphones on and like listen to an audiobook or just like music and like flip through my phone, which now that I'm saying it sounds completely insane.
No, like, I don't think it does. We're home all the time. Like, we can't just like, there's too much togetherness. Like, it's true.
It's too much.
Honestly, sometimes Dan plays like Zelda in one room and I watch Forensic Files in another. And it's like, then sometimes I'm like, oh my God, is our relationship in trouble? Because like, we're not in the same room. And he's like, oh my God, we're in the same house all the time. Yeah. Like, we're the only people we get to hang out with. It's okay. I think it's totally fine. It's so nice of you to even just sit on the couch with him. I'd be like, get out of here with your Shameless. You're amazing. Yeah. You're amazing. Another trophy for you. No, I think that's really nice. Like, being able to coexist on the same couch literally is like very sweet. And you can have that, you know, that quality time without having to be like engaged in the same content.
Yeah. And it's great. Like, I am new to the wireless headphones life, and it's so great for like listening to audiobooks or music while you're cooking or cleaning, organizing. Like, I'm definitely a big multitasker, and I just love that part of having these headphones. So if you don't want to pay, you know, the premium for Beats headphones, which I didn't want to, or whatever the headphones du jour is, I recommend these $39 ones.
That's awesome. I do love it. I'm wearing an over the ear headset now because it works the best with podcasting. It is so much more comfortable than shoving something in your ear. I want to tag on a new recommendation to your recommendation because I just thought of it. A thing I bought recently. How do you guys sleep? Like, do you guys both listen to something before you go to bed? Does one of you need silence and one of you needs noise? Like, what's the routine for you guys?
For Corey, he's very deep into the Calm app, the meditation app. Mm-hmm. And I make fun of him for it because it works so well for him. There's this one particular one called Deep Sleep Meditation. It's 9 minutes long. Every single time it will knock him out after like the first 3 minutes, and I'm still awake, like listening to his snoring or whatever. Like,
yes,
after, because I get desensitized to meditations if I repeat them, so it doesn't work. It worked for me the first time, but the third or fourth time didn't work for me. But for him, it's like that's his I'm so happy for him because, like, I wish I had like that to knock me out completely. For me, it's actually just like reading a book in bed.
Nice. And it'll before. Just like kind of make you drowsy.
Yeah. Although I did have like a month in quarantine where I was watching Gardener's World. Have you seen it. This?
Yes.
You
know about this? Yes, I do. Okay. That's awesome. Tell everybody literally, a little about that.
Okay. So Gardener's World is a British show about gardening hosted by Monty Don, who is like a legend. He's like a British gardening icon. Mm-hmm. I want to say he's like in his 70s now. He's quite old now. But it's this amazing like hour plus long show about the details of gardening. Like one segment will be somebody visiting a garden in Scotland and taking you through all the beautiful flowers and like, look how they've structured the spruces with like these like daylilies and all of that. And then there will be segments where Monty takes you into his like potting shed or some other part of his garden. And he's doing what he calls like his weekend chores.
Yes.
He'll say like, these are your chores for the weekend and gives you these like very wholesome tips of like how to divide your tulip bulbs or like, you know, how to warm up your dahlias or it's just so calming. Comforting there. And by the way, I don't have a garden right now. So there's no practical reason that I am watching this show. It's just like, it's so calming.
It is.
Just imagine like British people talking to you in warm, dulcet tones
about flowers
with like birds chirping in the background and like bees buzzing around.
It's perfect ASMR.
Perfect ASMR. And like usually the 30-minute mark is when I'll start to doze off.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
That's a really good pick, especially if you're somebody who like need something I just need noise, you know, so I can listen to like Real Housewives reunions, like I can listen to women screaming at each other and it'll put me to sleep. But if you need something very like calming, yeah, that is a very very good recommendation. I'm gonna send you this link, but I was gonna recommend, and maybe Corey will like them for the meditation, but they're called sleep headphones. It's a Bluetooth headband that has little speakers next to your ears. So it like, it's like a workout. It looks like a workout, you know, headband that you like use to put, but it has little speakers in your ears, and then you can cover your eyes with it if you want to. But you know, it's so you don't have to like sleep with headphones on. And I know sometimes when I would fall asleep with my AirPods in, there'd always be like one lost in the bed by the morning, and then it would freak me out. But yeah, this is really cool. It's really cool. It's like $20.
I'm going to look that up.
I'll link to it in the show notes. I'll send you an email with it. But I got them a few weeks ago. And because Dan and I listen to, he listens to basketball podcasts and I listen to Real Housewives going to sleep, or like, you know, audiobook, like whatever, but totally, totally different content. And it's always a battle of like, I can hear your podcast, I can hear your housewife. So it's like, we were like, okay, well, what's a, you know, solution for this? And you can turn it up full blast and he couldn't hear it next to me. So it's great. They're like Bluetooth.
That's a big win.
A huge win. I'll send you a link.
That is a genius.
Those are the things that make me so mad that I'm like, I can't believe I didn't come up with this. This makes so much sense. Good headphones That's are awesome. Like very good to have. Do they have a micro? Do yours have a microphone on it so you can like make calls, or are they just pure listening?
That's the only gripe that I have about the ones that I just talked about. They don't have a microphone.
Okay. Yeah. Just listening. I like that.
Yeah.
And I love this whole list, and I want to ask you a million questions, but I'm going to ask you to tell me about the pottery from East Fork.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know about East Fork?
No, I don't.
Okay. So East Fork is a recently new to me brand. I actually think I was introduced to them via Molly Chen, who is also on your podcast.
I love Molly.
She's great for recommendations. But they are a pottery studio based in Asheville, North Carolina. And the owners are really cool too. They're definitely craftsmen in like the truest sense of the word. I think one of the co-owners is a like direct descendant of Matisse, I believe.
Wow.
So like very, very into their craft, which I truly appreciate. And when I saw Molly recommend them a few years ago, I bought like a dinner plate and a couple of other like knickknacks. And they're beautiful because if you go to their site, they have different
on it
glazes.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. They have different what they call glazes. But like for a normal person, I would just say like their colors, like colorways of different types of dinner plates. And I'm trying to figure out how to describe it. But if you look at it, it looks very
gorgeous.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. They're pretty hefty. They have a beautiful like grain to them. They have this like very distinct edge, like a ceramic edge to them.
Yeah.
They look like what you might find in like a very well curated boutique in LA, which I'm sure they
or Williamsburg. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, or Williamsburg.
Yeah, this is
so
beautiful.
It's like that
stuff.
Level of aesthetic. Yeah. So a few years ago I was looking to invest in dinnerware because you know, like we've really only had whatever dinnerware I picked up from Target one day in my early 20s, of course. So I bought a like a little set to try out and I really loved them. If you're also an Instagrammer or love to like Instagram your food, any food you put on this plate will look beautiful. Like you could put like, I don't know, potato chips on it and it'll look like art. So
perfect.
It's wonderful for that.
Wow.
But I put it on my list because I think the way that East Fork runs their company and their brand is really fascinating. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly transparent about their production capabilities and how things work. I remember they wrote a blog post last year about where their dollars go towards, like in a visual pie chart of like, this is how much of your money that you pay. Because I think they were getting complaints about, you know, why does this plate cost $30?
Right.
Well, let me tell you, there's a real person in a kiln or like a studio, like who is crafting this plate. We have to pay that person. We have to pay for marketing. We have to pay for distribution, packaging. And I love, like, I still remember that blog post to this day because as a maker and like as a creator, it's hard when people are kind of complaining about, well, why does this cost this much? It's hard to fight back, not fight back, but like justify it sometimes. But I think they're very self-aware of the value that they bring through their beautiful products and craftsmanship.
Right.
So,
it's not like they're saying like, well, that's a you problem, but I think making that point that it's like if you want a quality, you know, handmade, handcrafted piece of kitchenware, this is what that's gonna cost you. And it's really great that like, you know, I think a lot of stuff on Amazon and like the Targets and there are really fun things there that are like way more accessible but also a lot less expensive. And I think that it does sort of become a little shocking when you're looking at a plate and the one plate costs $30. That reminds me of that thread about independent bookstores. I'm sure you know it, but it's like when someone, it's like a bookseller maybe a couple of years ago, but it's been making the rounds lately. You know, a woman was at her independent bookstore was remarking that a customer came in and like looked at the hardcover that was like $24.99. And she was like, I can get this for $10 on Amazon. And the woman who owned the store, like wasn't upset. She was just like, well, let me explain like how this works. Like if you know, like we get these books at a discount. So like I bought all of these hardcover books for $15 each. If I sold them for $16, like that's not enough to keep my store open. Like that's why we have to sell them full price. And so it's like that transparency allows you to draw the line between like, oh, why are all these independent bookstores closing?
Because you found cheap books.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, because like we recently did an audience survey and I think you will always get this feedback, I think, when you are a writer or creator who is making products. Like, everybody always wants more budget-friendly, accessible products. Mm-hmm. But I think it's like, we were discussing this as a team recently, you know, but then there's also this idea of like sustainability and supporting makers. Like, that does come at a cost, because a lot of sustainable brands are very much time and like labor intensive, and you have to pay folks fairly. And it's just like a weird trade-off. But I think as a consumer, the more you can become educated about the supply chain and about how things are made, will help you understand like whether or not you want to invest. Because that's how I approach the Eastfork plates. Like, they are an investment, and that I now understand the story. Mm-hmm. I now understand how these are made. I know the people who are making them, which makes it all the more special. So,
yeah, I mean,
my little soapbox.
No, it's a lot. There's a lot of truth to that. I think, you know, that quote, you know, no, there is no ethical consumption under capitalism is like something I think about. And also, like, you know, we do a lot of talk about Amazon and recommending Amazon products. And I'm always torn about Amazon because, you know, I don't buy books from Amazon. But Amazon is like, for a lot of people, like, it's one of the only accessible things that they have. Not everyone lives in the middle of like a booming metropolis.
Totally.
Not everyone can afford, you know, the expensive brand of XYZ. And Kate Bayer and I had this conversation a few weeks ago about the overalls that she recommended from Amazon. And, you know, they're way more size inclusive, and they're cute, and they're on trend. And we had a big conversation about how, like, you know, I would happily spend a ton of money on overalls from like a, you know, a sustainable fashion brand that would fit me. And there aren't that many, you know, there aren't that many. And that's why I appreciate Katie Storino, because she's always doing the, you know, the call in the brands and like make my size and stuff. But we were talking about how that there's a tug of war there where you're like, hey, like, Amazon's making like a 2XL or a 3XL, you know, mm-hmm. overall for girls who, or for women, or for anybody who, you know, don't really fit in that like straight store size, or like just one or two above straight mm-hmm. store sizes. And for a long time, all of those people have been like left out. And now mm-hmm. there's this opportunity. So it's like, it's everything. It's like, there's a huge... There are so many different columns, you know what I mean? Where like, we're like, okay, well, this doesn't, you know, fit my set of beliefs about this thing, but this doesn't fit my set of beliefs about this thing. And
100%. Yeah. And look, I still shop at Amazon. I got the ugly headphones from Amazon. Like, I think it's just about, as long as you're conscious and in like intentional in your consumption and informed.
Yeah.
I just hate the whole like never ever shop at Amazon, because for me, at least in my life, like, that's not realistic for a lot of the reasons mm-hmm. that you shared. But do I curb my, you know, do I do second thoughts of, well, can I wait to get this from somewhere else, from like a local maker? Like, yes, like those are kinds of the questions that I'm asking myself now. Yeah. But I don't think like, just because somebody shops on Amazon, like, you're evil.
No, not at all. Yeah. It is, but it is. It's just, it's the world is very gray. You know, the lines of all these things are very gray. And I do have a few friends who don't shop at Amazon, and I think that's amazing. That's like, that's really great. If that's like, if that's where, you know, if that's how you're choosing to like be a consumer, and you can do that, then that's more power to you. I love the idea of finding, I love everything that Eastfork has to offer. I'm like, okay, what do I need? But also, like going, like, there's so many great brands, especially for pottery, for ceramics, for kitchenware, really cute things. Like, look on Etsy, look, you know, Molly Chen, mm-hmm. great recommendations on this stuff. Like, just start mm-hmm. Googling around, because like, there is no shortage of really, really well-made, handcrafted, like, houseware stuff.
Yeah. And Etsy's great.
And it's great.
I've definitely been looking more on Etsy for like vintage furniture and just like everything. It's, I'm a little biased though because Corey works there now.
Oh my gosh, really? Tell him I'm a big fan.
Big fan.
I've been looking at planters on Etsy. Like for plants, planters for plants. Did you know that's what I was saying?
There's a lot of good ones.
There's so many good ones, and it's fun. And also, like, we've talked about this so much on the show, and I'm sure you feel the same. It's like there's nothing to do right now. So when I know that a box is coming, I'm like, a box is coming to my house today. Like, it's like the biggest thing that ever happens. Like, when I see a tracking number update and it's like, will be delivered by 5 p.m., I like wait by my door and I'm like, hello, mailman.
There's like 100%. There's like so much more anticipation.
The little things
now. Something to look forward to.
Truly.
Know?
Well, yeah. Alicia, thank you so much for coming. This was like such a fun time to spend with you.
Thank you for having me. And I'm glad that I could share with you my 17 items I love.
I love it. I'm going to list it for everybody on gthanksjustboughtit.com. We'll do like a little blog about it. If you have links, Alicia, that you want to send me so that I can share, that would be great.
Yeah.
It's a great list, you all. Like if I had a Patreon, we would do like behind the paywall app. Let everybody know how they can subscribe to Girls Night In if for some reason they are not yet a subscriber.
Yeah, to subscribe to Girls Night In, go to girlsnightin.co. Nice. And enter your email address. And we send a weekly email every Friday morning. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Girls Night In Club. I'm on Instagram, aren't we all? I'm at Alicia Ramos.
You just got swipe up, right?
I just got a swipe
up. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy for you.
I feel drunk with power. I know. It's amazing.
I'm very close and I'm really excited to be close. Like we're now like the final 1500. I'm at like 8500, so I'm hoping maybe by the fall. But
yeah,
oh my god,
do a drive.
Are you
we
just
do like a drive to help you get there?
Like like a save the children, like help me get to 10,000.
Hashtag road to 10K.
Do you write the road to 10K? Do you feel just because I want to know what it's like? Are you really mindful about what you do swipe up on, or are you just like just the floodgates are open and you are doing the swipe up?
The floodgates are open. You know, I did have 10K. Paralysis the first 24 hours.
Right, that it was going to drop. Like,
what is she going to do? Swipe up before. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to, I think my first swipe up was actually to like either Selena Gomez's
perfect
Architectural Digest
video.
Or no, yeah. Kylie Jenner's.
Oh,
I think,
yes.
Was the first
haunting,
one.
Haunting,
so
honestly.
I bestowed that honor upon Kylie Jenner. So you're welcome, Kylie.
She is.
Or Kendall. Sorry, Kendall.
Kendall's was haunting. Yeah. The very last second recommendation. You guys watch the Architectural Digest celebrity home tours. Another Rachel Wilkerson Miller recommendation. They are so infuriating and you will very quickly learn many celebrities do not have taste because a lot of those houses are ugly. I'm excited that you have 10K. I'm gonna manifest that into reality for me.
Thank you. I'll also do that for you.
I loved having you. I'm so excited for everybody to hear this episode, and I hope that we can do this again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.